Hello, and welcome to Cromford's Assortment on Thursday, the 7th of May, 2020. On this day, the 7th of May, 1663, the Theatre Royal in Drury Lane, London, was opened. That's just one of the millions of venues that I've never played. Harumph. On this day in 1824, here's one that I'm quoting verbatim from the onthisday.com website, because the grammar's priceless. Quote, Ludwig van Beethoven's 9th Choral Symphony premiered in Vienna, often regarded as his greatest work. Unquote. I had no idea that Vienna was built by Beethoven. No wonder he only had time for 9 symphonies. On this day in 1941, pardon me boy, is this the Chattanooga Choo Choo? Yup. Glenn Miller and his band recorded that song on this day. Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina. Unless it's a pizza in Buxton. There's some birthdays for you. Robert Browning, Mr. Pied Piper of Hamelin, was born on this day in 1812. Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky, the Russian composer par excellence, was born on this day in 1840. Jimmy Ruffin, Mr. What Becomes of the Broken Hearted, was born on this day in 1936. And Anne Dudley, composer, erstwhile member of Art of Noise, writer of this. The Fry and Laurie Jeeves and Wooster theme was born on this day in 1956. Oh, I so want this to be true, but there's not much corroboration for it online. However, on this day in 1997, it seems that West Midlands Police began a month-long amnesty for students at Wolverhampton University because they'd been implicated in the disappearance of over 100 traffic cones from Woolvo's streets and roads. Oh, yeah. You can take the boy out of the town, but you can't take his yen for nicking a cone away from him. And finally, on this day in 2001, Ronnie Biggs, the most incompetent and useless of the great train robbers, returned to Britain of his own free will from exile in Brazil and many other exotic countries. I think he'd been anticipating a hero's welcome, freedom of the City of London, loads of free healthcare. Well, 1 out of 3 wasn't too bad, was it? Now, a few weeks ago, we heard from the origami wizard Marriott Frinton, who showed us all sorts of interesting and potentially painful things that you could do with shiny-sided washi paper. Well, he's filed us another report, and here it is.
Hello, I'm Marriott Frinton, your origami guru. But I'm not here today to do any paper folding. Today I'd like to introduce a good friend of mine, the astronomer and xylophone virtuoso, Patacake Moore. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Marriott, and thank you for inviting me over. Is this about 2 meters, do you think?
Yeah, this is about right. Now, what have you got for us today, Pat?
Well...
I see you've brought one of your mysterious gizmos along.
Yes, indeed. I want to tell you about something very interesting that's happening out there in deep space, and I need this machine to explain it with.
Well, I am intrigued and no mistake. What is this machine? Looks a bit like an exercise bike.
It's my own invention. I call it a frequency accelerator. And you work it just like an exercise bike, you see?
Not really, but I suppose it'll become clear when you've told us about the interesting deep space thingy.
Yes, exactly. Now, first of all, press that blue button on this panel here.
The blue button?
That's it. Now, what do you hear?
It's a clock ticking, isn't it?
Well, not exactly, because you see, Marriott, a clock, if it's accurate, should tick exactly once every exact second.
Right.
Which is 1 hertz in technical terms.
Okay.
Whereas this ticking is ever so slightly further apart, something like 0.91 of a hertz.
So that means this clock is running a bit slow, yeah?
Exactly. Now, Marriott, could you go over and mount the exercise bike?
I am intrigued. Okay.
Careful not to tear your shiny hazmat suit. Nice shugging on that fipple, by the way.
Okay, I'm ready. By the way, this hasn't healed properly yet. Do you want me to put my...
No, just use your feet.
You want me to pedal?
Yes, but very slowly.
Like this?
Yes, that's perfect, Marriott. You've done this before, I can tell. All right, stop.
Okay.
Now, when I press the blue button again... Hear that? The ticking's twice as fast.
Oh. Yeah.
Right, pedal again, a bit more vigorously this time.
Right.
All right, stop. Now I press the button again. And guess what?
This is just a wild stab, Pat, but has the ticking gone double speed again?
Brilliant. That's something like 3.642 hertz, you see.
Pat, I'm struggling to see what all this has got to do with the deep space thingy.
Well, I'm coming to that, Marriott. So, pedal again, really quite briskly now. Stop. I press the button. Double speed again. Now we're getting somewhere.
Pat, if you're just getting me to pedal this bike so you can speed up the ticking, couldn't you...
What? Couldn't I what, my boy?
Couldn't you just get something electronic and twiddle a knob?
Yes, of course. But this way is so much more fun, isn't it?
My suit isn't really optimised for bike riding, that's the problem. These twig fronds are beginning to chafe.
Oh, that'll clear up in a couple of days. Meanwhile, in the spirit of scientific inquiry, just you pedal again and put your heart into it.
For God's sake, Pat!
Stop! Oh, sorry, I was drifting off. We've overshot ourselves, I think. But never mind. I'll press the button, and... Voila!
What do you mean? Voila!
That's just over 29 hertz. And do you know what you've generated there, lad?
What?
That's the lowest B flat on a piano keyboard. That's what.
Pattercake, if I wanted to hear a B flat on a piano, I can think of ways to do it that don't smart quite so much and don't sound quite so much like a horse with flatulence. I mean, that just sounds rubbish, that does.
Yes, well, all right. Now, let's go for doubling the speed three more times. Pedal for all you're worth, Marriott. You're a credit to science.
This had better be the last one, Pat.
You're doing marvellously, my boy. Almost there now. Just one last push.
Oh!
Well, what's the matter?
Oh, I've caught myself in the cogs.
Oh dear. Badly?
Well, what do you think?
Shall I come over and help?
No, it's all right. I'll just back pedal a bit. Oh,
I say. They look very poorly. They don't look very clever at all. You'd better bathe then, you know.
Ooh, I'm going to need to chase that one up later. In the meantime, it's time for On the Trot. This is where I suggest something that you can stick in your ears when you go for your daily walk or your daily jog. And this week, it's a real relic from the era of glorious mono. The Rolling Stones covered this in 1963, I think it was, which was all very well, but this is the original. This is Benny Spellman with Fortune Teller.
I didn't know what to tell her. I had a dizzy feeling in my head. Then she took a look at my palm. She said, "Sonny, you feel kinda warm." She looked into a crystal ball and said, "You're in love." I said, "How could that be so? I'm not tight with none of the girls I know." She said, "When the next sun arrives, you'll be looking up in her eyes." Looking forward to my big surprise. The next day I discovered all that the fortune teller told me a lie. I hurried back down to that woman, mad as I could be. I told her I didn't see nobody, why she made a fool of me. Then something struck me, as if it came from up above. While looking at the fortune teller, I fell in love. Now I'm a happy fella. I'm married to the fortune teller. We're happy as we can be. And now I get my fortune told for free.
One of my favourite books for the last 30 or 40 years has been The Book of Heroic Failures by Stephen Pyle. And it contains, amongst other things, the account of the drunken BBC commentator. It's a beautiful description of Lieutenant Commander Thomas Woodruff trying to commentate for the BBC on the illumination of the British fleet at Spithead in 1937. And dear old Tommy had apparently been overindulging before the broadcast. And Stephen Pyle's description of this event was one of the highlights of that book for me. And believe it or not, it was only this very week that it occurred to me to start looking for it on YouTube. And, aha, I found it, and lots of other people have found it. And now I'm going to share it with you. This is what the Navy sounded like off its face in the 1930s. I have edited it slightly for unlistenable noise, but I haven't done anything to change the sense of it or the lack of sense of it.
It is the regional program, the illumination of the fleet. Once again, we're taking you on board HMS Nelson for a description of the scene at Spithead tonight by Lieutenant Commander Thomas Woodruff.
At the present moment, the whole fleet is lit up. When I say lit up, I mean lit up by fairy lamps. We've forgotten the whole Royal Review. We've forgotten the Royal Review. The whole thing is lit up by fairy lamps. It's fantastic. It isn't a fleet at all. It's just... it's fairyland. The whole fleet is in fairyland. Now, if you'll follow me through... if you don't mind. The next few moments, you'll find the fleet doing odd things. Now, at the present moment, the New York office is lit out. And when I say a fleet is lit up in lamps, I mean she's outlined, the whole ship's outlined in little lamps. I'm sorry, I was telling some people to shut up talking. What I mean is this, that the whole fleet is lit up in fairy lamps, and each ship is outlined. Now, as far as I can see, it's about, I suppose I can see it down about 5 or 6 miles. Ships are all lit up. They're outlined, the whole lot. Even destroyers are outlined. In the old days, you know, destroyers used to be outlined by a little kind of pyramid of light. And nowadays, destroyers are lit up by the outline themselves. In a second or two, we're going to fire rockets. And you may hear my reaction when I see them go. Because, I'm going to try and tell you what they look like as they go off. But at the moment, there's a whole huge fleet here. The thing we saw this afternoon, this colossal fleet, lit up by lights. And the whole thing isn't fairyland. It isn't true. It isn't here. And as I say it, it's gone. It's gone. There's no fleet. It's disappeared. No magician who ever could have waved his wand could have waved it with more acumen than he has now at the present moment. The fleet's gone. It's disappeared. I'm trying to give you, ladies and gentlemen, Professor Stern. The fleet's gone. It disappeared. I was talking to you in the middle of this dam, in the middle of this fleet. And what's happened is the fleet's gone, disappeared and gone. We had 100, 200 warships all around us a second ago. And now they have gone. At a signal by the Morse code, at a signal by the fleet circuit, which I'm in now, they've gone, they've disappeared. There's nothing between us and heaven. There's nothing at all.
All right, could you keep it down now, please? I'm on the phone. Hello. This is Paul Cromford for the online magazine programme Cromford's Assortment. Is that Pattycake?
Yes. Hello, Phil.
So, how's Marriott doing?
Oh, not too badly, Phil. He's dosed up to the eyeballs with painkiller, and he's got a bowl of water to bathe his wounds in.
That's good. Pattycake, we were all left dangling when Marriott had his mishap. I wondered if you could finish your demonstration right now, over the phone. I've got a recorder going.
Oh, splendid, Phil. Right, where was I? Ah, yes. I was trying to show that any regular pulsing, even the ticking of a clock, is a kind of musical note. But some pulses are too slow for us to hear them as music unless we artificially speed them up.
Preferably with electronics and a twiddly knob.
Or something, yes. I chose B-flat as the note to illustrate because it turns out that there's a cluster of galaxies called the Perseus Cluster 240 million light-years away in deep space. And this cluster is emitting a pulse with a cycle of 9.6 million years. And, do you know, it looks as if that pulse is B-flat, 57 octaves below middle C.
Really?
Yes. So it seems there might be objects throughout the universe that are doing similar things. Space is singing to us, Phil.
The music of the spheres.
Well, it's more the music of the bits between the spheres, but never mind.
Can I just say something?
Marriott wants to say something. Go ahead, Marriott.
I can't feel a thing with these beauties, but they were both purple, and now one of them's turning yellow.
Did you catch that, Phil?
Yes. Sounds like somebody will be in severe discomfort tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Hope it's not me.
He's off with the pixie folk, I'm afraid, Phil.
That's all right. Thanks for a very illuminating talk, Pat. Cheerio for now.
Oh, bye-bye, Phil.
So, clearly, Pat is having to now share Marriott's self-isolation since he invited himself over to the house. Which brings me on to something a bit more serious. We're now in the seventh week, I think it is, of the COVID-19 restrictions. And obviously it's been very awkward for a lot of us. It's been very difficult for a few of us. It's been nightmarish for a few of us. But I'm now thinking about some of those people out there who are not connected the way most of us are. There are people out there who have been self-isolating. They don't have the internet. They might have the phone at best, and that might only be a landline. And I was thinking about this the other day, and it put me in mind of a song that I'd written about 7 years ago, a song called Homebird. And it's a funny thing about songs. You write a song about a particular set of themes, and then as time goes on, the song seems to sort of take on extra dimensions of meaning because of things that are happening. When I wrote Homebird, I was thinking about either literal houses, people being housebound for physical, medical reasons, or metaphorical houses, you know, the human body. So people in coma, people with dementia, people with catatonia, people with chronic depression, agoraphobia, lots of reasons for not going out, not socialising, not meeting people, not meeting the people that matter to them. And now, of course, in the light of the quarantine restrictions and so forth, the song has another level of meaning that I'd never intended it to have. But to spare a thought for those people who are a bit less connected than the rest of us, here's a special performance of Homebird that I recorded last weekend.
Laughter, making love. We've put
put our world to rights. And I could cry now, knowing all too well these are but dreams, since this evil happened to me. And I see seasons pass as you rebuild your life. No glances my way, you believe these window panes are blind. To your dismay, but wait, come near the glass, look for the signs that this evil paralyzed me. Can't you see I never left? I still live in this house. Told you that all I have is yours, and that I would let loose all hell if it could smash the walls we built between us now. I'd go through fire for you to spend just 10 seconds gazing at me. Can't you see I never left? I still live in this house. Still inside this shell, I never left. I've never been away. Please just see how I cloud the glass. And that's about all I've been able to collect for you this week. I hope you've enjoyed it, and if so, please make a date for next week's show, Thursday the 14th of May. In the meantime, you know what you've got to do, you know what you've got to be, and you know what you've got to stay. I made this program for you, and I'm going to be here sending them out as long as you're there to receive them. We are going to get through this. Bye for now. Cromford's assortment was conceived, assembled, and presented by me, Paul Cromford. I don't own the song Fortune Teller, I just borrowed it to entertain you. All other music and musical excerpts throughout the program are mine, keep your hands off. This was a Paul Cromford production for little old you.